Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president, Local 237 Teamsters. With me, our very special guest, Queens District Attorney Melinda Katz. Now, Melinda is not a stranger to this show because she was on the show in another capacity. Melinda Katz was born and raised in Forest Hills and is a product of our public school system. She has been a public servant for 20 years. After graduating with honors from the University of Massachusetts, District Attorney Katz attended St. John's Law School. Upon earning her law degree, she interned for future U.S. Attorney General Michael McCaskey in the Southern District of New York, and she also worked for the Legal Aid Society and the U.S. Attorney's District Attorney's Office. Welcome to Reaching Out.
Mr. Floyd, thank you for having me, and to all your members in Teamsters Local 237, thanks for all their support, thanks for all their faith, all the help they gave us in trying to do the right thing for the borough of Queens County.
Now, we were having a conversation just before, just walking to the mics, and I get the feeling that this is your dream job.
It does seem like that. Now, I am amazed every single day that I walk into the office. And, you know, we have a saying, it's not every day that you can dispense justice and fairness in your job. I spent 25 years in and out of public service, assemblywoman, councilwoman, borough president. And I will tell you that with an office of 700 people that I run right now, about 350 attorneys, about 350 staff members, and then about 75 investigators that work with us every single day, to truly find out the truth and find out really how to dispense that justice. It's an amazing job. And the changes that we've already made in the office and the changes that I know we are going to make and we're on that path were not easy to do. But, you know, I always say if it was easy, anybody could do it. They wouldn't need us. And it's been an amazing experience so far. And hopefully it stays that way.
Well, you mentioned changes.
Yes.
What changes have you made?
So, in addition to a lot of the staff changes that we made, so we have an entirely new executive team. One person is still there from the former administration who I think is a very talented executive. We have a new chief executive. We have new execs over the trials, over investigations, over all of the divisions in the office. But on a substantive level, we've also gotten rid of the top count plea only. You know, there was a time when you could only plea to the top count of any charge when you got arrested. We also got rid of what was called the 180-80 waiver policy, which meant that if you didn't want to only have the top count plea, you had to waive your right to your grand jury within a few days. And you know what? That's a right that everyone has. And there's a reason for that right. You should not be sitting in jail when you have not been indicted for anything. You haven't had a trial for anything. You haven't been able to get the facts on the table. And we were the only county in the entire state of New York that had that still. So I got rid of it on day one. And so In addition to all of the new discovery laws, in addition to the entirely new administration, we also got rid of this policy that's been part of Queens County for many decades.
Now, for those who are listening and they heard what you said, can you just break it down and explain exactly what that was that you got rid of?
So there was a time in the DA's office a year ago when you'd get arrested. You had a felony count that they wanted to charge you with. You have a right, a legal right, to be indicted within 5 days. And those indictments, you know, your listeners will know it as a grand jury and just take it to the grand jury and see whether an indictment is warranted. What would happen is the staff of the DA's office would like you to waive your right to that. And basically it meant that until you had a trial, you were sitting in Rikers if you didn't make bail or if you were remanded. You were sitting in Rikers until everyone sort of figured out what to do, whether they were going to indict you, whether you were going to get released, whether they weren't going to charge you, all of that. And so there were people sitting there. They were not yet indicted. And the reason that people would waive that right is because the policy was that they were not going to do anything but a top count plea unless you did that, right? So investigations wouldn't go on, all these things that matter to find the right person and right justice. And so we got rid of that on the first day. And I think that it was a very, very big step towards fairness. I think it, I'm hoping yes. it sent a message to the bar, the criminal defense bar, who is a large part of what we do and great partners in finding justice. It sent a message that this was going to be a fairer, more transparent office.
Okay. So that would, I would say that would go hand in hand with handling of the change with cash bail. How are you handling that?
Very carefully.
Yes.
You know, it is, look, this is the issue with cash bail. We went so far in the wrong direction when it came to cash bail. And, you know, it happened, I think, quickly. It happened all of a sudden. There are those that would say that it was a long time coming and that it took a long time to get here. All I can tell you is that the inequities were so clear to me that cash bail was being used for the wrong purposes, right? And you didn't talk about it. You didn't, like, say, this is why we're doing it. We think this person is dangerous. We think this person should be kept in. You're basically doing it because you wanted to keep someone in. And so this is what would happen. There'd be two people who committed the exact same crime, who may have had the exact same history. They got $100,000 in bail. The person with money could get out, have dinner with their family that night, go to school the next day with their children and walk them back and forth. And the person who did not have the money would end up staying in jail, right? And there's really no difference between them. And so I think that we need to get to a place where we have no cash bail. I will tell you that right now it's very difficult. Right now there are no alternatives. So we have very few alternatives. So if you get arrested and you commit a crime, they're not sure that you're going to show up. You commit a violent crime. We're not sure that you're going to show up in court, let's just say. And that's really what's supposed to be the bail for, right? To make sure right. you actually show sure. up at your court appearances. We have very few alternatives to that, right? We don't have supervised release in a way that I'm comfortable with for those types of crimes. We don't have programs like drug rehabilitation, mental health awareness, cure violence groups who are very successful in the borough, but don't really have a partner yet. We're working on that with the DA's office, but it's just not there yet. So right now, cash bail is what we have to make sure people show back up or when we're just not sure, you know, if they are going to stick around. When it comes to the misdemeanors and nonviolent offenses, we also have a bit of supervised release, but I would say not enough. I think that if you have a mental health illness and you need help, then we should have a way to get you that help right at arrest and right at the arraignment. I think that if you have a drug problem and you're an addict and you need help in getting off of these, you know, drugs that you're on, that we should have a system in place to help that. And I don't think spending, you know, months in Rikers is that system. Nobody's coming out of Rikers better than when they went in. And right now, we just don't have those resources. So we are working on it.
Okay.
On my day 42.
So let me ask you, for the real violent offenders, say they commit an assault, there's no bail. They come out, but
it
within
depends on the gravity of the assault.
And a couple of days later, they commit another assault. Are they re-released after they commit another crime and they have another case, or do
yes.
we have a mechanism to keep them behind bars because they've shown that they cannot behave themselves?
So right now, you know, everything's in flux, and I think that everyone's trying to figure out the new law as well. Right now, if the assault doesn't have serious physical injuries and it's a minor assault, it is very, very difficult, depending on the circumstances, to have bail, right? You wouldn't remand in a case like that.
Sure.
But even to have bail, if you thought that was a necessary thing, I will tell you that from my perspective and the way I do things, for the more serious crimes, rapes, murders, manslaughter, you know, serious physical injury occurring, we are starting to use, instead of doing $200,000 or $250,000 in bail, which used to be used to keep people in. That was the purpose of that bail, to keep people in. I'm almost more comfortable remanding on those cases because whether the person has money to get out or not, it doesn't mean it's a different person.
Right, right.
And it shouldn't be how much money you have in the bank.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, you're the first new district attorney in Queens County in 28 years. Tell us your vision for your office.
Well, first of all, I'm very honored to be the new district attorney. I had a great relationship with Judge Brown, who was the previous DA. My father and him knew each other well. They were part of this old sort of Queens royalty at the time, you know, 30 years ago. And so I've known him a long time, but times have changed. As a borough president, I had community partnerships that I was very proud of with a lot of these groups who really are mentors to our young people. And so one of the biggest differences under my administration, I mean, as in addition to looking for pre-sentence diversion, looking to not charge especially young people, and when I say young, I don't mean 17, 16. I mean like 22-year-old kids who don't have a record, have never been arrested. You know, once you charge them and you put them through the system, it's going to follow them for the rest of their lives. So in addition to all those changes and not doing top count, we also are going to have an executive leader of a community partnership. And that community partnership is a woman who has been a prosecutor for many years. She was in family court before as a bureau chief. And part of her job has always been to find alternatives to incarceration, work with probation, and make sure that we give a lot of young people, and not just kids, but young people, a better chance. And so under my administration, we are going to be working with the community organizations. We're going to have people at everything from like civic associations to the police precinct councils. And I'm also looking to do a lot of work with previously incarcerated. You know, I went to Rikers a few months ago, I guess it was 2 or 3 months ago at this point. I talked to a lot of the young people there. And I was talking to a group of older, I guess, teenagers, young 20s. And they talked about when we get out of here, we really want to help other kids find better choices and better paths. I think we can do that with people that have done heavy time in state prison. I think if you've done heavy time in state prison and you're from the communities and you're coming out, I think there are a lot of those folks who would just love to come into the community and talk to our young people about, you know, choices that they made and what they went, how they went wrong along the way, and have them come into the junior high schools and the high schools and talk about better choices and better paths and the fact that anyone can get out and do the right thing if they want to do that. I think it'll go a long way, especially in our increasing violence that's happening around the borough. And so we're looking forward to those things as well.
There's an organization called Council for Unity that's been around for at least 30 years that have ex-gang members. Some of the young people that were incarcerated, they're now out. It's run by a gentleman by the name of Bob DeSena. I could give you his number after this. They've already got programs in our city schools, and you should have a conversation with them because that comes to mind. They're there, and what you're looking for, they have, because I've been involved with the Council for Unity for at least 14 years, and they do outstanding work.
We'd love to talk to them. I'd love to talk to him. And we're looking at all the programs now. So the woman that we hired to run this division, who, by the way, you should just know, this is not just some division. This is a division that's on par with the executive of major crimes, with the executive investigations, with the executive of our trial division. So she's a powerful force in our office. And we'd love to talk to the group about partnering up. We also have other groups in Queens, right? We have Life Camp, we have 100 Men, 100 Suits, you know, we have Rock Safe Streets, we have the Furtado Brothers, who I love. You know, it's just amazing how many people we have that do these partnerships. But I think one of the biggest problems is they haven't really found a partner in the DA's office. And you know, we can't prosecute our way out of this violence that is happening on our streets. We have to look at the gangs. We have to look at prosecuting them in a way that helps pull the young people out who aren't lost yet. And, you know, I hate to think anybody's lost, but, you know, we have to make sure that we keep Queens safe as well. But we need to figure out a way to make sure that the gang structure is not the family that people are looking for, you know, that we can provide that as well. And so we look forward to working with a lot of the groups that are in the borough.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With us for the first time as Queens District Attorney, Melinda Katz. Now, you have an influx of new executives that's shaping your office going forward. We understand the staff is eager to work. Can you just tell us some of the people that you brought with you?
Sure. We have a great new executive leadership of really young, talented leadership with many, many years of experience, decades of experience. I think it's over 150 years or something like that altogether. We kept Dan Saunders. We call him the last man standing as part of the executive team. He's head of major crimes, and he's an amazing prosecutor for real homicides and major, major crimes that you want someone there with that kind of talent. We have Beshoy Yaakob, who we divided up our trials division. He's a young, experienced ADA from the Bronx, and he's head of the Supreme Court trials. Angela Albertus, who's head of the criminal court and policy. She came also from like family court and knows that I believe in diversion and alternative sentencing. Colleen Babb, who's going to be the executive in charge of community partnership. She's going to be in the community. Jen Nyberg, who is the chief executive, CADA, the chief of the office, has many, many years of experience and has been key in restructuring us. So this is a group of people who believe in my vision and who understand my vision and who understand the fact that I do believe that almost everyone can have second chances. But at the same time, it's our job to keep the borough safe. And I think that you can do both. During the campaign, we talked a lot about it, but now that I'm here, I'm even a greater true believer of this concept, which is that you can have both. You can have justice for victims while you have justice for defendants. They're not mutually exclusive, and they are not something that can't happen together. You can have both. But as my executive team will tell you, I am also a true believer that the best way to help our folks is keeping them out of the criminal justice system to begin with. And so those programs are going to be key in that.
Okay. So are there any new initiatives that you'd like to tell us about?
So right now we have restructured the office, and our new initiatives coming up is going to be a worker safety bureau, its own bureau. So you have accidents on site. We're not going to wait for DOI DOB to tell us that there's criminality. If there's a major injury, a serious physical injury, we're going to have an ADA go out there with an investigator with some sort of expertise in construction or engineering. So we're not just relying on the site inspector for that expertise. We are working on a hate crimes bureau that's going to be extremely expansive. We're going to have a worker protection bureau, which I think is key, right? It's not about, it's about protecting workers that are out there right now who are being taken advantage of, either because of their documentation status or because of other reasons. And we want to make sure that they have an outlet that's not going to get them in a problem in order to make sure that people are treated with respect and dignity, and issues like that would be taken seriously by my office. The biggest initiatives are going to be the diversion programs that I wholeheartedly believe in. I will tell you one of the things that we are strengthening are the DWI issues. I am a firm believer that DWI is one of the most selfish crimes that you can possibly commit, right? It's a person who drinks, who gets into a car, who doesn't really, either care or think about the consequences of that action. And so we're taking a very serious look on how this office handles those types of crimes. And we'll come out with a new policy on that as well.
And by selfish, you mean putting other people's lives in danger.
Putting other people's lives in danger, putting your own passengers in danger, putting everyone around you in danger because you don't know how you're going to act under the influence. It's a real issue that we need to deal with in a real effective manner, I would say.
Okay. And what are your top priorities?
So right now in the borough of Queens County, our shootings are up. Gun violence is by far the biggest priority. And we are working diligently with the police department to not only find shooters, but really to go up the chain and find out how guns are coming into our borough, right? So even though I believe in diversion and I believe in alternatives to incarceration, I will say, and I believe that people who are on the street, and a lot of the younger people especially, can be pulled out and we can give them a second chance. But you come into my borough selling guns from other states to the kids in my neighborhood, we're coming for you. And it's something that will not be tolerated in Queens County. And so we have a very active bureau, very active investigators working towards making sure to get the guns off the street, at the same time making sure that we have these community partnerships. Because if there's no market for these guns, if people aren't out to buy the guns, the traffickers aren't going to have any business.
Right.
And that's truly where you need to be.
So let me ask you a question about the, and I want to try to phrase it. I'm trying to remember the word for it. Some of the cases that come up, and the right to discovery, the defense gets a witness list and addresses. Tell us about that. Tell us the change in law that now requires witnesses to be disclosed.
There's a new law that's been passed by the legislature, and it doesn't quite say that, but it's a concern. And
yes.
I am well aware of the concern, and we deal with it every single day. So it used to be that the defense counsel didn't get the evidence till like the day before the trial, right? And it's not fair. It's not right. You should be able to build a case. You should be able to defend yourself. You should know everything that the prosecutor's office knows. And I totally get that. And that's really, I think, a great addition to fairness in the state of New York. The problem with that is that a lot of the witnesses, especially in gang violence, especially in assault, especially in some of the rape cases that we have, that means that part of the discovery ends up being witnesses' names, their phone numbers, where they live, identification information that's on there that may not be turned over till the day before the trial. And so keeping people safe has become one of the top priorities of the office as well. So you can file for a protective order. And so there is a lot of fear on it, but there is a way of protecting the witness's identity if it's done right. You go to the judge, you say, this is a protective order. We're redacting the information for the witnesses. We fear for the safety of that witness. We fear for the safety of the victim if it was a random crime. And the judge and the DA's office and the defense counsel should work towards a protective order for those folks. Yes, it has been an issue in some cases. We are working, every day to figure out what the parameters of that is, because it's not quite clear all the time. Some judges are people, right? They have
sure.
some. They have their
yeah.
own opinions and how they look at protective orders. But in general, in Queens County, we've been able to protect most of our witnesses and our defendants that needed it, and it's worked out okay. It may be tweaked at some point, but at this point, it's working out. I think the problem with the discovery for us is really the speed in which everything needs to be done. So within 15 days, you're supposed to have everything to the defense. And although I do think it's a good policy, it's created some difficulties in just doing it effectively and making sure that we don't miss anything. And so we're doing everything we can, and so far it's been pretty good.
Is 15 days enough time for you, or should it be a little longer?
Well, you can actually make, you can actually ask for another 30 days and show what you've done already to get there. And look, I think that it will all work out. I'm not of the opinion that the sky is falling. I think that the legislature is well aware of some of these issues. I think that they are talking with us and working with us and trying to figure out the future of it. And I think that's half the battle. And so I think that good things are going to come out of this. We can extend it 30 days if we have to. I think at one point there may be a distinction between those defendants that are in and those defendants that aren't. So, if you are ROR'd, if you are out on your own recognizance, or if you've made bail, maybe the time may not be as much of a factor if you're out. But right now, it's 15 days. Right now, we are adhering to it and every day trying to do our best.
Very good. Thank you for clearing that up for us. We're winding down. We have about 30 seconds. In 30 seconds, do you have a last message?
I just want to thank the people of Queens County. I want to thank 237 and Mr. Floyd. I want to thank you for your leadership and for all that you've given to this great city of New York. You've been an amazing leader. I look forward to doing this job in a fair and just way. And I know that every single day it'll get better.
Thank you. And thank you for coming back on Reaching Out as the Queens District Attorney.
Always my pleasure.
Thank you very much. Our special guest was Melinda Katz, Queens District Attorney. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.